Hey there, welcome to Takeaway with Sam Okus, a podcast from Nation's Restaurant News. I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief here at NRN, and this is the show where I give you an all-access pass to the restaurant industry's most influential decision-makers. This week, I'm talking with Mark Torres. He is the CEO of sandwich concept Chiba Hut, which recently opened its 50th location. This Colorado-based brand differentiates itself not just through its high-quality sandwiches and its full bar at most locations, but also with its marijuana theme. That's right, Chiba Hut embraces a bit of a stoner vibe and pro-cannabis spirit, thus the toasted subs, though it doesn't actually serve any marijuana-related products. Mark joined the podcast to talk about how Chiba Hut embraces that theme without putting anyone off, how its labor requirements are even more stringent than most restaurants, and why it's so important for companies to let franchisees think outside the box. Before I jump into that conversation, remember that there are many other ways you can engage with NRN's award-winning content. Not only can you subscribe to our monthly print edition and daily AM newsletter at nrn.com/subscribe, but you can also subscribe to NRN's podcast Extra Serving, where our editors discuss the hot button issues of the day and we share interviews with a wide variety of restaurant personalities. We also recently launched another podcast, First Bite, a daily podcast that shares the top restaurant headlines of each day and goes deep on one particular headline with the help of the NRN editorial team. Be sure to subscribe to Extra Serving and First Bite wherever you listen to podcasts. Finally, don't forget that in 1 month, we are going to be in Denver for Create, our live experience, bringing together restaurant founders, executives, and leaders for 2 days of education, networking, and good eats. I've been telling you for weeks now about all of the incredible programming that we're going to have at Create, but to really boil down for you why I think you should join us in Denver next month, here are my 7 reasons why you should register for Create today and join us in Denver next month. My first reason is that you can get dynamic insights from marketing genius Banan Bao. Banan is the co-founder and chief strategy officer at Group Black, which is a collective of Black-owned media and operators. He has also been chief growth officer at Triller, chief media and e-commerce officer at Mondelez International, chief digital officer at PepsiCo, host of the CNBC show Cleveland Hustles, produced by LeBron James. He's also the author of the book Text Me, a comprehensive look at how phones have changed the consumer mindset and what businesses can do about it. Banan is our keynoter at Create, and he has incredibly thoughtful and creative insights into marketing, and it can really help you think outside the box on reaching your customer. You are going to learn so much from him, and you can have direct access with him and ask him questions as well. Second reason that you should come to Create is that you can make valuable connections with your industry peers. I'll leave it at this. Networking is everything, and you can build your network with folks who are in your shoes at Create. My third reason for why you should come to Create is that you can learn from an incredible speaker lineup. We have the CEOs of Applebee's, P.F. Chang's, Torchy's, Noodles & Company, Duck Donuts, Smokey Bones, and Capriati's, plus major executives from companies like Chipotle, Wendy's, IHOP, Shake Shack. We also have leaders at emerging chains that you hear us rave about, chains like Rasa, Chaya, Plant Burger, Zalat Pizza, Next Level Burger, Cilantro, and Big Chicken. These folks and many, many more are going to be there at Create, and you will have direct access to them. You can ask them your own questions, you can learn from them in their sessions, and you can just connect with them on a one-on-one basis. My fourth reason for why you should be coming to Create is that you can enjoy fast-paced one-on-one content. This is not your typical conference. We are not just doing panel after panel after panel. We call this a festival because it's sort of a choose-your-own-adventure approach, and this is one-on-one sessions where you can have a little bit more of an intimate setting with each speaker. You can have direct access to them, ask them questions. That's what this is all about. This is about getting face-to-face with the experts and your peers to learn from each other. My fifth reason why you should come to Create is that you can meet the winners of our Hot Concepts and Creators Awards. These are the companies that we are recognizing as being the innovators in the space and the most exciting companies to watch. If you want to learn from them and get to know them and get to know a little bit more about those strategies that help them win these accolades, you can meet them directly at Create. Reason number six for why you should come to Create is that you can enjoy the incredible food, drinks, and vibe of Denver. If you want to get away, this is one of the best places to do it. It has a phenomenal food scene in Denver. If you haven't been, you've got to come. If you've been before, come back. There's so much to do, see, and eat in Denver. And finally, reason number seven for why you should come to Create is that as a listener of Takeaway, you can attend for free. That's right. Using the promo code Takeaway, all one word, you can get totally free registration to Create. That is a $550 value. So what are you waiting for? Go to create.nrn.com right now, input the code TAKEAWAY, one word, and register for Create for free. I will see you in Denver September 19th through 21st. Okay, jumping now into my interview with Chiba Hut CEO Mark Torres. Also, don't forget to stick around after the interview as I will share my six takeaways from this discussion, actionable insights that you can take with you on the go. All right, Mark Torres, the CEO of Chiba Hut. Thanks for taking some time to chat today, Mark. For those who do not know about this brand, what's the quick synopsis of the story of Chiba Hut?
So we are a 20, almost five-year-old brand here. We are the original marijuana-themed sandwich shop and goes back to our roots, 1998 down in Arizona. And we have about 30 subs. We do all toasted subs and we have full bars in most of our locations. So that's a key differentiator. And our average unit volume is right about 2 million a store.
So a marijuana themed restaurant, I have to imagine that goes a lot easier today than it did back in 1998 when the brand was founded. What's the evolution of how this concept has been embraced?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Starting down in Arizona, where there really were very strict laws, it made it a big, you know, kind of talking point, we'll say, locally. And so, you know, the founder, I think, can tell quite a few stories of cops coming in and grabbing subs, but kind of checking things out a little bit as well. And then we did move our headquarters to Colorado in 2001, and the founder set up shop out here. So the evolution of legalization, you know, really might have started in California, but was really embraced here in Colorado. And so we were able to kind of grow up with the industry and the evolution. We call it riding the green wave. And we feel like we were paddling far enough ahead of the wave that we were able to catch it pretty well here and feel like we're, you know, really just starting to crest it. But, you know, it depends on the market on really whether it's just like, oh, that's just Chiba Hut, or whether it's, oh my goodness, that's Chiba Hut. And, you know, we opened in Little Rock, Arkansas in 2020, and we've just been embraced very well by the local community there. And it comes down to the food. Everybody loves our food. So that's what keeps everybody coming back. But there's also outspoken and closet smokers everywhere. So we really feel like we're actually a great place to build that community and get people kind of gathered around. So feel good about it.
Tell me how much you do lean into it, because as your website very clearly states, there is no marijuana in the food, and this is, you are not selling marijuana, obviously. So how much do you lean into that, and why do you think that's important? Because it's not a dispensary. So how is that theme still at the root of everything Chiba Hut does?
Yeah, so we have actually the First Amendment, we call them our plaques in every single store. And really the founder based it largely, you know, he is definitely a pot smoker, but he also is a huge proponent of just free speech and being able to, you know, kind of live that value. And so he calls it poking the bear. So, you know, if somebody tells him you can't do something, I mean, he's going to lean right in into it and do it. So when in 1998, when he said he's going to open up a marijuana themed sandwich shop, there was a lot of people that said, you can't do that. And that just really kind of fanned the flame for him and really kind of made it even that much more important for him to accomplish it and to make it successful. Because there is this notion out there that, you know, stoners are just on their couches and lazy and things like that. And, you know, we're out here to really prove that wrong. We have a very high performing system here. We have high level talent in our offices. We have really, really capable people in all of our stores. And I would say the vast majority of us all smoke pot. So we like to say that we're stoner professionals, not professional stoners. And, you know, that's something that I think we go out and try and prove every day. There's a lot of folks out there that obviously smoke weed and don't, you know, maybe do it more to relax or maybe to, you know, take advantage of not doing a whole lot. But there's, again, a lot of really high functioning, weed smokers out there and we employ quite a few of them. So, we feel great about, the message that we put out there and really trying to take that, that stigma away from marijuana users.
So I was on your website and I was poking around the frequently asked questions and on there, you know, questions like, is this a kid friendly brand? Is this brand for stoners? Which the answers are very much yes, kid friendly. No, not just for stoners. So I'm curious, how much does the theme ever get in the way from a business perspective? And do you ever have to, I mean, do you throttle it a little bit more in Colorado and in Arkansas, you pull back a little bit on it? What does that look like?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the brand across the country is really, it's full-fledged in every single location. We like to say it's more innuendo than in your face. So if you do come into the store, I mean, and you're looking for it, you can definitely see all the innuendo, all the inclusions in our murals and on our artwork and things like that. We have sneeze guards that we put a lot of stickers on and things like that. So if you're looking for it, you see it. If you're not, I mean, people come into our stores every single day and don't really get it. They don't pick up on it and they just love the food and keep coming back. As far as the kids are concerned, I mean, we feel like we have evolved with a lot of families. So when we started out, we were largely focused on college campuses and really kind of hitting the student population. But as these students have grown up and have graduated and moved on, they're obviously starting their families. I'm a walking example of that. And, you know, so I feel like Chiba Hut is then kind of passed on generationally because, you know, we really feel that we are not like anybody else out there. And so the folks that get it, you know, get what we do and why we're different, I mean, they really get it. And they like to share that with as many people as they can. So our fans are our true fans and we are very loyal to them.
Of course, today to legalization efforts, you know, I mean, this thing is getting bigger and bigger. I mean, maybe a matter of time before marijuana is legalized nationally. Maybe that's a pipe dream, no pun intended, but, you know, who knows where this goes from here. But it is an environment in which a cannabis themed restaurant is going to be, again, a lot more embraced than it was in years past. Do you guys participate in some of these efforts to around legalization and supporting that? Is that ever a part of the brand at all?
So in some of the early years in Colorado here, we would host some events for Front Range Normal or some of these legalization efforts. We really try to stay out of the political side of things just because, you know, we feel like Chiba Hut is, I mean, first and foremost for our fans, but really it's for everybody. Anybody that wants that, that experience, that awesome sandwich, obviously, and things like that. So, we try to stay out of the real active participation, but, It is also an area where I do think franchising has a good opportunity in that, you know, our local owners participate at different levels. We are really careful not to put anything inside the store that actively promotes it. There's nothing coming from headquarters here that is out there promoting it. And so there are some local opportunities, I think, for our events. We'll sometimes have some activists in there that are going for legalization or what have you, but we don't actively do anything on a daily basis or from a national level to promote legalization.
So speaking of franchising, you guys just crossed a milestone. You opened your 50th location, which is, I'm sure, a huge, is a momentous occasion for a brand like this as you in your growth efforts. How would you describe those growth efforts? What are you trying to accomplish as far as where this brand is expanding and who you're hoping to partner with from a franchise perspective?
Yeah, appreciate that question. You know, the growth has been really organic over the years. We're a privately held company. We never took money. We have done this all on our own. And so the ability for us to really kind of navigate our own way has been important for us. As I said, the founder is very particular and likes to do things just to do them. So we're really charged with, you know, carrying that forward. And so that's been helpful, but because of the organic growth, it has gone in waves. So we started franchising in 2001 when Scott moved from Arizona to Colorado here. He franchised off his stores back in Arizona. Then he started rebuilding stores here in Colorado and kind of got into that cycle of opening some stores and then franchising them out. And then that kind of propelled our growth early on. 2007, 2008, we actually had a pretty good round of franchising. But then, you know, things slowed down a little bit. We hit a little bit of a glass ceiling in 2014. We were kind of stuck at 15 locations. So we did what we've always done. We went and started opening company stores again, getting them up and running, and opened about 10 or 12 stores, kind of reinvigorated the system, and then refranchised those off, and then did another kind of big round of franchising in 2019 that kind of set us up for where we are today with 28 franchise partners, 50 stores, 15 states, and just really being mindful with who we bring into the system. It's really special, and we want to protect it. And so we actually have a cap right now, or at least a breaking point, I guess, or a stopping point of 40 franchise partners. And so we have a, you know, that number in mind for us to put franchising on pause. We paused it between about 2014 and 2019. We paused any new franchise recruitment. And then once we hit 40 partners, we'll do that again. We'll reassess and determine how we want to move things forward. But our growth ambitions are really to get to around 200 locations by 2030. And so that's us opening between 15 and 25 locations a year for the next 7 years. We feel really confident that we can do most of that growth internally with who we already have in the system and just really be diligent with bringing any new partners in. We want to know every single one of our franchise partners. We want to know their golf handicap. We want to know their kids' names, things like that. And we really want to keep those relationships special. That's kind of what we've always done. And we feel like once we go over 40, we might start to lose some of that. So that's a little bit of a long-winded answer there, sure. But that's the plan here.
How would you define your franchisee base? I mean, are these mom and pop style operations where they're fans of the brand and they want to get involved, or are these portfolios looking to complement the portfolio with a sandwich concept?
Yeah, almost entirely just fans of the brand, some mom and pop style, but a lot of our partners have actually had really successful businesses in other industries. And so they're coming in not with scrounging together their last dollar to open up one store. We only do 3-store deals. So you can't do just a single store deal. And so most of our folks are, you know, relatively sophisticated, if not in the restaurant industry and other industries. And so, I guess if I could describe our partners in one word, I would say diverse. We have just a very diverse group, and they bring a lot of particular expertise in their areas. And so we really, again, keeping it into a small community, we really try to leverage those experiences. So, and we're learning from every one of our franchise partners as well. We don't say, hey, we've got it all figured out, just do this exactly. We like to say, you know, we have a box that you have to fit into as part of the franchise. But we let you color outside the lines a little bit. And our box tends to be quite a bit bigger than a lot of other franchise concepts. So we embrace feedback and little nuggets that we can use to improve our system.
Speaking of that, and you mentioned how the full bar is kind of this point of differentiation for the brand. How does that come into play for franchisees? I mean, because that's a whole other ball game. That's different than running a Subway or a Jimmy John's, right? A full bar, I mean, that's a totally different thing. So I imagine your franchisees must be on board with that. But how is that a selling point, I guess, for Cheapa Hut?
Yeah, I mean, $2 million AUVs. So that really helps there. We actually only do about 10% of our total sales out of the bar. So regardless of it actually being, you know, a key factor in operating a Cheapa Hut, it's not necessarily the biggest driver of sales. It's really more of the energy that the bar brings and the ability for us to throw a party. We're a big party company. So, you know, having the bar, you can throw parties. Hard to throw a party at a Jersey Mike's or something like that, right? Right. It just doesn't quite have the same vibe. We tend not to hire high schoolers at all. So the bars definitely lend themselves to having a little older employee base. And so, you know, it's something that's part of the experience. That's what Cheapa Hut started off as, is a cool place to work. Scott, our founder, really wanted to, you know, he knew he was opening up the shop. He wanted to work with his homies and he wanted to hang out with them and make it to where work didn't quite feel like work. And so that's part of the experience today as well, where, you know, when you're an employee and you come on, you're hanging out at Cheapa Hut after your shift, you're having your shift drink and you're hanging out with your friends, some of them probably coworkers, others that are coming from other, you know, restaurants or other jobs as well to meet up. And so we like to definitely consider ourselves that community gathering point. And, you know, the bar also keeps us out of what we like to call the veto vote. So, you know, if you're going out to eat with your friends or your family and somebody wants a beer or a cocktail, you know, if you're, you know, it really helps to build that dinner day part as well. We're selling sandwiches, so it's really challenging not to beat up on Jersey Mice, because I really like them a lot, but I think they do a great job. But it's got to be tough to sell sandwiches at nighttime. So the bar helps out with that. It helps out with that experience from the employee, and definitely keeps us out of that veto vote. I don't go to Jersey Mike's on a Friday night. Right. I go to a place where I can grab a beer.
Well, I mean, to that end, too, you know, sandwich joints are often seen as a lunch occasion anyway, right? I mean, you know, you have your there's obviously a lot of nuance to this, but, you know, you have your pizza. It might be a dinner occasion. Maybe burgers are a pizza or a dinner occasion. But typically people see sandwiches as lunch. So what is that split for you guys, dinner, lunch? I mean, is it pretty even considering the alcohol inclusion?
Yeah, it actually is. And I believe we're about 60-40. It's very location dependent. So, you know, some of our stores are in downtown areas that just, you know, they do $4,000 or $5,000 lunches and then maybe only a couple thousand at night. But we have a very diverse portfolio of restaurants as well. So some of our campus locations, our store in Madison, Wisconsin is from 10 p.m. till 3 a.m. is, you know, the busiest store in our system. They have a line out the door the entire time. The bar is completely packed. And, you know, so that kind of might skew the day part a little bit there. But again, a diverse group of restaurants, diverse franchisees. And so it also allows the bar also allows our franchisees to kind of lean into certain things that are important to them. So down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, they do a drag brunch once a month where they, you know, have the bar there to really help kind of facilitate that brunch atmosphere and having mimosas and then having that local partnership. So again, the bar just really opens up the ability for events and for just doing cool stuff at the store to bring that energy and keep it unique.
I hope this doesn't sound cheesy, but I mean, it just sounds like your product is less, I mean, it's sandwiches, but I mean, it sounds like your product is a vibe. You guys are creating an experience, a vibe, more than just offering sandwich and a beer.
Yeah. I mean, we, again, it goes back to the stigma of the stoner a little bit, but, I mean, we take our business very seriously. So we want it to be that, you know, we work without it trying to look fake, right? You know, mm-hmm. we're working on the energy from day one when we start training. You know, we're setting the vibe. Our stores, you know, 20 years old, we set the vibe a long time ago. And in our new stores that we're opening now, we really use our training system, our training team and our training systems to set that culture hook really early on and really get it going at a high level. The subs, we home make all of our, we do it hard. We say it's supposed to be hard around here. If it's easy, we need to relook at it because we shouldn't be doing it if it's easy. So we home make all of our sauces. We're, you know, hand slicing, hand prepping everything every single day. We do have the best bread in the biz. And so we take our experience and the energy very seriously. We take our food very seriously. We take our facilities very seriously in terms of cleanliness and making sure that it, you know, rounds out that full experience. But yeah, we don't really half-ass anything. We go hard in every single area and set a really high bar. And I'll use that opportunity just to tell a quick story. So
yeah.
You know, the expectations that you have most times you're going to get a sandwich relatively low, right? You want a decent sandwich. You kind of want to get in and out and go on with your day for your lunch and things like that. So expectations, most sandwich shops, pretty low. Going into Chiba Hut, the expectations are really like through the roof because most of the time people have heard about Chiba Hut. And again, I mentioned it earlier as far as people coming to Chiba Hut in groups, but most people, we do have people come in just by themselves and grab a sandwich and leave. But a lot of times it's this guy really turning on his friends to it or, you know, their family to it. They're like, oh, Chiba Hut's opening up here. I used to go there back in Arizona or back in Colorado, and now they're finally here. And they tell all their friends about it. They get all their coworkers in the car and they start driving down. And so when they're coming into Chiba Hut, I mean, this person's been selling it for the last, you know, week or the last day, telling them how great it is. And it's the best thing ever. And so we really have to be on our game every single day. The music can't be off. The food can't be off. The crew can't be off. The expectations for us are just super high. And, you know, it's not uncommon for people to drive literally several hours just to come get a sandwich at Chiba Hut. And that's something that, again, we take very seriously. People's time is something we take very seriously. And so if they're going to spend their time with us, we want to make sure we are hitting it on all cylinders.
So to that end, tell me about how the last 2 years have been with hiring, training, retention. Everybody's struggling right now with the whole labor piece of things. And it just sounds to me like you guys require a higher quality kind of person to run your stores. So how do you find those people? And then how do you keep them around?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been tough. Some markets tougher than others, for sure. But, you know, I think we are in a little bit of a rebuilding time right now where we really are focusing back on that interaction. We like to say it's more about the interaction than the transaction. So really focusing on that interaction, but we did lose a little bit of it over, you know, those couple years, but our fans never went away and our culture stayed super strong. A lot of our core people at our shops stayed with us, you know, and they really set the tone for it. So I don't know. It's been tough for sure. The culture really keeps people super engaged. And so I do feel like we were at a much better advantage than a lot of other concepts out there. I mean, at Chiba High, you can wear whatever shirts you want. You can basically, you know, you can be yourself. And so I can't imagine trying to hire and retain people when you got to put on a goofy hat and a name tag. I mean, that's got to be extremely challenging. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our folks, I think, do really take pride in working at Chiba. When you are working at the shop and somebody says, hey, do you work at, you know, like, oh, I work at, you know, whatever, some chain restaurant or something like that. Well, at Chiba Hut, there is that pride factor. And so it's something that I think enabled us to retain a lot better over that time. So we definitely felt it, are still feeling it, but I feel like we were in better position than a lot of folks out there.
So what other things have been challenging Chiba Hut over the last couple of years? Obviously, the whole global pandemic thing, I'm sure it was pretty tough. But what are some other issues you're navigating, particularly today?
Yeah, so easy one, and I guess the one everybody always will talk about is supply chain. But, you mm-hmm. know, we've actually done pretty dang well there. We put things in place really early on to protect our supply chain on the development side of things with construction and new stores. Also, we just, we don't do a whole lot of proprietary items. Again, we make all of our sauces in house. So, you know, there's an issue with one mayo or something like that, we can go get another mayo that is just built into the recipe. It's not like it's this proprietary labeled item that is coming from a commissary. And if there's an issue there, it's a bigger issue. So we are actually able to navigate it pretty well on the supply chain side of things. For us as a company, I would say outside of the restaurants, it's really been this whole challenge of trying to keep it cool as we grow. And that's something that when you're opening two or three restaurants a year, you can put a ton of time and energy into the stores. When you start opening 10, 12 restaurants a year, which is where we're at right now, we really don't want to lose any of that soul to the shops. The murals still have to be just as awesome. The music's got to be just as good. The crew's got to be just even better trained. And so really been focusing on that as a new challenge. You know, the founder has basically challenged us with, you know, right now we're 50 stores, every single one of them is unique and different. And mm-hmm. we want to be at 100 stores with every single one of them unique and different. Our kitchens, fairly standard. Out in the lobbies, though, we allow for a lot of individuality out there, a lot of customization, a lot of changes, things like that. And so, you know, that has been probably the biggest challenge is how do you keep them unique? It's hard to keep them unique in supply chain issues, right? Because you're like, oh, I found a lighting fixture that works. You know, let's just order that for every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Well, we can't do that. It's got to be different in every single one of them. And so that's been a fun challenge to deal with and something that allows for a lot of individuality and creativity to get through some of those challenges. And again, I think that's where we lend ourselves just to that bigger box. You know, there's still a box. You still have to have a certain level of lighting fixture or booth package or tables or whatever it might be. Like, you can't do cheap vinyl covered tables, but if you want to go to your local carpenter and have him make your tables, hell yeah, let's do it. And so really just having some of those flexibilities allow us to keep moving at a pretty good clip.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So, Mark, last question for you. You talked about opening 200 locations by 2030, which is obviously very exciting. But what else about this business is most exciting you right now?
Yeah, so the most exciting thing about this business right now is I think trying to manage how we grow long-term, because what we see is just an evolution of our franchisees. We see an evolution of ourselves internally here. And so we're actually in the process. We refranchised most of our stores in 2021, basically. And so we're down to only one company store right now. And again, it's kind of in our DNA to kind of do company stores. It's what we've always done. We're operators. I started in 2005 making sandwiches here in Fort Collins. And so we're going back. We're starting to open company stores again down in Arizona. And so I think it's really going to be, you know, the most fun, most exciting thing about it is just we can do whatever we want. We don't have anybody else sitting at the table. Our shareholder meetings, everybody that's a shareholder is working in this office today. And so, you know, it's really just kind of navigating those waters. I know as we grow larger, the sharks definitely get a little bigger and a little sharper. And so really making sure that we're staying in good position, we're staying ahead of our competition, we're making good decisions that affect our store level economics, and we're not cutting corners anywhere. And yeah, I'll be honest with you, Sam, this is actually the last interview that I'm going to be taking for probably until 2025. We're calling it going stealth mode. So there's a lot of things that even I said on this podcast that our founder would be like, ah, you don't give away the trade secrets, you know? And so outside of new store openings, we're actually going in stealth mode here. I feel like some brands have done it pretty well over the years. I think Torchy's did a really good job. Nobody even knew they were even around until, you know, they're at like 80 locations or something. Right. And then they finally started getting in the press once they did some private equity stuff. So I think we've done a good job building out the brand, getting some franchising efforts out there and doing things like that over the last few years. And again, now we're going to go stealth mode. We're going to go under the radar. We're going to support our NSOs through, you know, some PR efforts and things like that. But for the most part, we're going to pop our head up in 2025. We'll be at about 100 restaurants at that time. And we'll probably check in again and we'll see how it's going.
That's right. That's great. Well, Mark Torres, CEO of Chiba Hut, I'm honored to be your last interview for a few years here. And I guess we'll talk to you in 2025. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Sam.
That was my interview with Chiba Hut CEO Mark Torres. So what should you learn from this interview? Here are my six takeaways. My first takeaway is that if you paddle way out ahead of a trend wave, you can ride it to big things. Chiba Hut was way out ahead of the curve on marijuana. When it was founded in 1998, back then there was a lot more stigmatization around marijuana, and certainly it was not legal in nearly as many places as it is today. But Mark talked about how the brand has really ridden this green wave, that as marijuana has become more popular, but certainly as it has become more accepted in the culture and legal in a lot of parts of the country, Chiba Hut has been able to capitalize on that and ride that wave. But again, they were way out ahead of it. This wasn't something where, you know, they saw a trend pop and they jumped on it. They were out there doing this before things had really taken off for the marijuana legalization movement. And now they're able to reap those benefits. My second takeaway is that you don't have to hit your customers over the head with your theme. So obviously, I was trying to drill down into this with Mark in the beginning of our conversation because, you know, to me, as I think about something that is fairly niche, such as the cannabis industry, you know, it seems to me like that could be off-putting or alienating when you do this with a restaurant theme. But as Mark talked about, you know, they don't force this down customers' throats. They don't make this something where you're constantly reminded of the marijuana as you're there. And certainly they don't have that on the menu. They let it dictate the vibe. They let it dictate the experience. As he says, it's a lot of innuendo. But at the end of the day, Chiba Hut lets its food speak for itself. And so families come in, you know, people who don't smoke marijuana, they come in. It's not about marijuana. It's about the food. It is a restaurant. And so, again, there is a theme here, but they don't force it down the throats of customers. They just do that with the food. My third takeaway is that franchise brands can lean into corporate growth to maintain their momentum. I thought this was interesting how Mark got into talking about some of the seasons that Chiba Hut has been through with its franchising, that it's been popular at times and then, you know, kind of slows down, for example, in the last recession, and then it gets popular again. And to some degree, Chiba Hut has been controlling the momentum with franchising, and it will shut off its franchise opportunities from time to time to try to control the size of its franchise base. But at times when franchise interest dries up, like it did at the last recession, Mark said that that's when Chiba Hut turns to corporate growth. And, you know, that's a place where you can control that momentum. You can continue to invest in corporate stores, even when franchising is not as popular or just isn't taking off in that particular season. But the great thing about corporate stores is you can always turn around and refranchise them when that interest returns, which is what Chiba Hut's strategy is. And today, Chiba Hut has only one corporate location, but that doesn't mean that it's not in the future going to add corporate locations. It just means that it's using that as a lever to pull when it needs to build momentum if for some reason franchising has lost that momentum. My fourth takeaway is that you should let your franchisees color outside the lines a bit. This is a quote from Mark that I really liked. And you know what he meant by that is they're not trying to fit their franchisees perfectly and neatly into a box. They want their franchisees to bring their unique characteristics and their unique experiences into their restaurants. There's a lot of reasons for why to do that. For one, it really helps your restaurants stay unique and stay cool even as you scale. Your franchisees are doing that work for you. But also by doing that, you can keep the franchisees happy. You can really leverage their skill sets and strengths. You can help them to get really involved with the community. Just a lot of reasons why you want your franchisees to have more say over a lot of the characteristics of their restaurant and some of the interactions they have with the community. My fifth takeaway is that your employees are as much a part of your vibe as your product, decor, and branding. We talked about vibe a lot in this conversation, and clear reasons for that, of course, which is that Chiba Hut being focused around, themed around marijuana, you know, so much of what they're doing, it's a vibe. So how do they create that vibe? You know, they do it with their product, with their decor, and with their branding, but their employees are really key to this. And Mark said that, you know, they try not to hire high schoolers. They're looking for more mature people and also people who, you know, the kind of people who want to hang out after work, as Mark was describing. These are people who, you know, embrace the spirit of what Chiba Hut is trying to create and can pass the spirit of that along to the customers. Mark talked about how training is really essential to get that vibe right, because this is all, you know, it all ties up to sort of a bigger picture thing that Chiba Hut is trying to build. And the employees are really important to getting that right. My sixth and final takeaway is that the interaction with your guest is more important than the transaction. That's another direct line from Mark that I really liked, which is to say that, yes, the transaction is important. It's all about revenue at the end of the day, and you got to drive that revenue. But the interaction with your guest, that includes the hospitality, the experience, again, the vibe. Your employees, your franchisees, they are critical to bringing that interaction to life. And all of these elements are important to building a relationship with your customer, to building trust with your customer. The full bar, that's another thing that's important to Chiba Hut. That full bar, that's all part of this interaction that helps eliminate the veto vote for folks who want to drink. But again, also, if it's you want to throw a party, you want to have fun at the restaurant, this is the interaction with your guest. And that's really, really important as you build business, but also build a base of loyal customers. Those are all my takeaways for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe to Takeaway wherever you listen to podcasts and leave your feedback. You can also email me at sam.okus@informa.com. Thanks again and talk to you next week.